Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
A live look in Los Angeles, where the Free Britney movement just got a huge victory. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
The president's economic agenda hanging in the balance. Democrats at odds.
We have our differences of opinion. We're not a lockstep rubber stamp party.
Can the negotiator-in-chief strike a deal before the big vote? Cracking down on fake news. YouTube bans all vaccine misinformation. Critics calling the move an attack on free speech. The Free Britney movement, one step closer to getting their wish. Britney Spears' conservatorship battle back in front of a judge today. The ruling and what was said in court. The Afghanistan hearings, more testimony about what went wrong. Plus, the mayor of Kabul joins us to talk the state of his city under Taliban rule.
All of a sudden, we are where we were 20 years ago.
A teenage surfer saves three lives. Reports of mass animal extinctions. And Macy's heads to court to keep Amazon at bay.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. President Biden's agenda is in peril tonight. He is scrambling to save it on this eve of a make-or-break vote. Tomorrow, the House is set to decide on a bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Infighting among Democrats is threatening to tank it. Progressives say they will not vote yes unless they're also guaranteed to get a massive $3.5 trillion social spending package. Two moderate senators hold the keys here, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They've signaled opposition to the package. It's creating a major rift that could derail President Biden's entire domestic agenda. The clock is ticking. The House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer went to the White House tonight to meet with President Biden.
Expect our team, the president, just to give you an update, is going to be working around the clock. The rest of the today, overnight, into tomorrow morning.
It canceled a big trip to Chicago so that he could stay in Washington and fight for his agenda. We begin tonight with senior congressional correspondent Ilan Moy live on Capitol Hill. Ilan?
Well, Shep, the speaker likes to say that you take the votes when you have the votes. And right now, Democrats do not have the votes to pass either of these bills. The problem comes down to trust between the House and the Senate, progressives and moderates within the Democratic Party. Now, Senator Joe Manchin put out a statement tonight saying that he is worried that the social spending package would trigger massive inflation and that too many of the benefits are going to people who don't need it. Instead, he told my colleague Garrett Hake that the infrastructure bill should pass the House tomorrow.
We have the most important piece of legislation we've ever had in the last 30 years, which is the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It does so much in so many ways. Clean energy, everything we've talked about before. Why wouldn't we take that as a win and move on and negotiate good faith?
Well, Congressman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will tell him why. Here she is again with Garrett.
I believe that there are some that don't want to pass both bills. And I think that what we've seen from the influence of corporate lobbyists in Washington, that is absolutely part of the conversation. And that's why we want to secure a path to passage on both of these bills.
Now, if that weren't clear enough, the head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Representative Pramila Jayapal, tweeted this. Progressives remain ready and willing to vote for the infrastructure bill after the popular Build Back Better Act is passed. We can't leave child care, paid leave, health care, housing, education, and climate action behind. But that bigger social spending package is nowhere near ready, Shep, and that leaves Democrats' agenda in limbo.
But, Ilan, it now appears the government shutdown may not happen.
Yeah, if there's one thing Republicans and Democrats agree on right now, it is that they need to prevent that government shutdown. They're working to finalize a bill that would keep the lights on through December the 3rd. And both sides say they are confident they can get this passed and to the president's desk before the deadline at midnight tomorrow. However, the debt ceiling remains up in the air. The House just passed a bill that would suspend the debt ceiling through December 2022. But it's going nowhere in the Senate because Republicans remain united against it. Shep, both sides are really dug in on this one, too. And if Washington doesn't find a solution soon, the economy could face a catastrophe.
Elon Moy, thank you. Breaking last hour, Britney Spears is free of her father. The move after more than a decade of conservatorship of her and her $60 million fortune. Live pictures now outside the courthouse in Los Angeles, where today a judge suspended Jamie Spears from the conservatorship. For 13 years, he's had control over Britney's money and life decisions. No longer. Britney Spears has testified that the conservatorship under her father was abusive and exploitative. But this does not mean she's now completely free. You see, the judge appointed a temporary conservator. He's a certified public accountant named John Zabel, who's worked in Hollywood. That's something for which Britney's lawyer was pushing. CNBC's Scott Cohn outside the courthouse. Scott?
Shep, this is a huge victory for Britney Spears and for this huge throng of supporters here who went wild when the news came out just a short time ago.
We want this conservatorship to end. That's our number one goal, but this is a huge step, and we are extremely happy about it.
This is actually a major victory for the Free Britney movement. However, this is not the Remove Jamie movement. This is the Free Britney movement. So we will be pushing for the end of the conservatorship, and we're not going to stop until that happens.
And indeed, that conservatorship remains in place. She will remain in it for at least a little bit longer. This is what her team said in legal filings that they wanted. They wanted it as a way to hold her father, Jamie Spears, accountable for his alleged abuses over the past 13 years. The new conservator for now, John Zabel, will now get all of Jamie's records in the conservatorship. That is key. Jamie Spears' team wanted to simply end the conservatorship now, then settle everything up financially later. Now he could be subject to investigation by Zabel, including into these new allegations that he had a security firm spying on his daughter. That security firm, BlackBlock, saying that it acted legally. That's also what Jamie Spears and his team say, that everything he did was legal within the bounds of the court orders. But now this new court order by Judge Brenda Penny, Jamie Spears out as conservator as the movement to free Britney moves on. Shep?
Scott Cohn, thanks. David Henderson now, civil rights attorney, CNBC contributor. David, break down exactly what this means. Jamie Spears suspended as conservator. So is he done for good or could he still come back?
You know, Shep, in theory, he could still come back, but that's not what's going to happen here. What this means is that a huge weight has been lifted off of Britney's chest. And for her, this is actually good because one thing her lawyer made clear from the beginning is, Jamie Spears, you don't get to cut and run. You're still going to answer for your behavior in this conservatorship. And that's what suspending them allows them to do.
Some thought this was going to be the end of the conservatorship altogether. Were you surprised the judge decided to keep one in place for now?
Unfortunately, no, I'm not surprised, Shep. The wheels of justice turn very slowly. And you have to remember, the conservatorship exists to contribute positively to Britney's health and well-being. The judge is going to want to hear from an expert before she terminates conservatorship to make sure that Britney will do okay without it.
Well, she's obviously asked for an end to all of this. What does her attorney need to do now, in your opinion, to get to that place?
I think her attorney just needs to formally file between now and the time of the next hearing, which he asked take place at least 30 to 45 days from now. But in addition to that, what he's made very clear is he intends to hold Jamie Spears accountable through depositions and making him answer for some of the egregious details we've heard about the way he treated his daughter.
You mentioned the documents. You think those documents are the key to whatever happens next?
No, only formally, Shep. In terms of actually ending the conservatorship, there's some formalities that are associated with that, which Britney's lawyers chose not to engage in yet, because again, I think he wants a chance to question her father, which he's made very clear. I think the key to ending this basically happened today with removing Jamie Spears. But I think that what Britney will also need to move on is closure, and that's going to come through holding her dad accountable.
David Henderson, thank you. A new cell phone and new surveillance footage. Fresh clues in the manhunt for Brian Laundrie and his actions in the days before he disappeared. A fake news purge. YouTube announcing a total ban on all vaccine misinformation. How the company is determining what stays and what gets pulled. Vaccine mandates. The deadline for employees at United Airlines now in the rearview mirror. The brand new stats on how many workers are now on the chopping block and what the airline CEO is telling CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Brian Laundrie had a new cell phone. That's the new detail today of his activities after Gabby Petito's boyfriend returned home without Gabby and before he himself disappeared. His lawyer telling CNBC that Brian and his mother purchased this new cell phone for him on September the 4th and opened an account with AT&T for it. The lawyer says Brian Laundrie left the phone at home before he disappeared and that now the FBI has it. September the 4th is just 3 days after Brian returned from Wyoming without Gabby, and 10 days before family say they last saw him. The FBI has also gotten surveillance video of Brian Laundrie and his family at Fort DeSoto Park, where they confirmed they went camping about an hour from their home. That's according to deputies with the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office in Florida. The officials say the surveillance video will not be made public, not yet, because of the ongoing investigation. YouTube, it's expanding its crackdown on COVID misinformation. The company reports it's now banning all anti-vax videos. YouTube already had a policy against COVID vaccine misinformation, but the new ban includes any content that falsely claims approved vaccines of any kind are dangerous or ineffective. YouTube says it also removed the accounts of several prominent anti-vax activists, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We've reached out to Mr. Kennedy for comment. So far, no response. YouTube reports it's also taking down all videos that relate or violate those rules. CNBC's Perry Russum is here now. Perry, what's considered misinformation and what's not?
So the new guidelines mean you cannot post videos that have harmful misinformation about vaccine safety. And here are some of the examples they are talking about: that approved vaccines cause autism, that they cause infertility, or have microchips so you can be tracked. They will allow videos that debate the scientific process, vaccine policies, and personal testimonials related to vaccines, as long as the channel does not show a pattern of promoting vaccine hesitancy. If you violate the policy, YouTube gets rid of the video. They send you an email, 3 strikes within 90 days, and your channel is out. It is deleted. They can also delete your channel after what they call a single case of severe abuse, and they've already started deleting channels of anti-vax influencers. Earlier this year, the Surgeon General called misinformation a threat to public health and cited a study that found widespread acceptance of the COVID vaccine will be a challenge and could be held back by online misinformation. Shep.
All right, Perry. Thanks very much. You know, YouTube and all the other social platforms have long struggled with policing content. Remember when Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg said his company shouldn't be the arbiter of truth? Well, the social media companies all say they try to strike a balance of keeping an open platform while not allowing dangerous lies to fester. But critics say the restrictions amount to censorship. Kate Klonick now, assistant professor of law at St. John's University, her current research focusing on the development of Facebook's oversight board. Kate, thank you. You know, some have called this an assault on the First Amendment. Of course, YouTube is a private company.
Yeah, there's actually nothing implied about the First Amendment at all here. The First Amendment is only for government actors, restricting individuals' freedom of expression. Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, all of these platforms are private companies that can make the rules and enforce them as they want.
Vaccine misinformation is one thing. But what about when political speech is the issue? Is there a risk in having these private companies play the role of referee?
Yeah, there is a huge risk. I mean, for one, they're not particularly accountable except kind of through your ability to sign off of the platform or to sign on. There's no kind of vote. There's no type of representative. There's no way to weigh in on what the rules should be or shouldn't be. There are not even a lot of transparency around the rules or how they're enforced. This is something that has just started developing in the last 5 years at all of these companies. And so it's really dangerous when you think about the control that private companies have. But at the same time, it's really dangerous to think about what would happen if private companies weren't doing this type of work and everything that would be going on in these platforms without them.
Kate, thank you. New York's vaccine mandate for hospital workers. Just days after it took effect, Governor Kathy Hochul says no health facilities have shut down because of staff shortages. Not one. The governor says 92% of healthcare and nursing home employees have received at least one dose. The mandate appears to have swayed many hesitant workers to go ahead and get the shot. Many, but not all. Hospital officials across New York say they've suspended or fired employees for refusing to get vaccinated. And businesses with mandates may have to do the same thing. United Airlines reports it'll fire nearly 600 workers for failing to comply with the company's vaccine requirement. United CEO is Scott Kirby. He told CNBC this morning more than 99% of his employees have received at least one shot. That excludes people with religious or medical exemptions.
Because everyone is vaccinated, we'll know that we've met any of the requirements that are going to be put in place by the federal government and be ready to run a great operation with a fully vaccinated workforce.
United CEO says the company planned and prepared for the mandate and that he's confident it'll help the business overall moving forward. It's happened. The massive lava flow from the La Palma volcano has reached the ocean. And would you look at the steam? The air quality tests now underway and the warnings to people in the area. Thousands of migrants deported to Haiti. Now the Biden administration sending a delegation there. We're also there as more charter flights touch down.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
An update now on the volcano on Spain's Canary Islands. The big fear has long been that the lava flow from the island of La Palma would spill into the Atlantic Ocean. And now that has happened. As you can see here, the molten rock is setting off huge plumes of steam and scientists warn possibly toxic gases. While an initial air quality reading showed no danger, local officials are still urging residents who live near the water to stay inside. The volcano erupted 10 days ago after several small earthquakes hit the island. The red-hot lava swallowed up more than 600 buildings and forced nearly 7,000 people to evacuate. Top U.S. officials set to travel to Port-au-Prince tomorrow. They're set to meet with Haiti's prime minister and foreign minister to discuss a path towards social, political, and economic recovery for the country. Officials say they'll talk about mainly three things: support Haiti after the major earthquake in August, aid them in holding democratic election after their president was assassinated, and how to respond to a wave of Haitian migration to the United States. The number of Haitian refugees traveling to America became a flashpoint last week when the Biden administration reported thousands from the Mexico-Texas border were deported. In Port-au-Prince, here's NBC's Jacob Soboroff.
Shep, the situation on the ground here at the airport in Port-au-Prince is confusing and it is chaotic. You're seeing families and migrants who are walking out of the airport regularly after multiple deportation flights and expulsion flights are arriving here today. You're seeing what appears to be local police now entering the airport. And the reality is, by the end of the day today, there might be 6,000 Haitians having been expelled here over the course of the last 10 days. That's according to the UN's Migration Institute here on the ground, who's basically receiving the migrants who come back confused. Many of them haven't lived here in quite some time. They were living in Central and South America. They made their way to the United States in order to declare asylum. Obviously, they were unable to do so. The Biden administration is continuing these flights back here to Haiti, and the UN says they believe they'll continue for the foreseeable future. It raises questions amongst activists back at home whether or not the Biden administration is being true to its word about creating a fair, safe, and equitable immigration system. It also raises questions about what these migrants will do once they hit the ground here, many of them having not been here for years. Those are not questions that will be able to be answered, certainly not today and not in the foreseeable future. Shep?
Jacob Soboroff in Port-au-Prince. Extra support for America's veterans. The unique training and special commands that some dogs that we'll show you are using to make life better for those who served. Time is running out on President Biden's infrastructure bill. We'll spotlight one of the worst infrastructure states in all the nation. Its desperate need of fixes for roads and bridges. That's next as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. IT, artificial intelligence, and cloud computing. Not only tech buzzwords, but rapidly growing multi-billion dollar industries. A digital world that a global pandemic has only made more virtual. Many businesses are looking for workers with skill sets in computing. Now, a program from Amazon helps train Americans for the tech jobs of the future. Here's CNBC's Rahel Solomon.
I just needed a change in my life. I was just stuck at home and just wondering what else could I do besides coding.
For mom, Lynette Gravel, COVID made her realize she wanted a new job, but one that still allowed her to be with her young son, Kendrick, as much as possible.
I just wanted to be able to make sure that I'm right there for him at all times.
A medical coding pro, she hoped to learn cloud computing. So she went back to school, enrolling in a program at Central Georgia Technical College in partnership with Amazon Web Services.
Now is the time to upskill and reskill talent. And we're doing that in collaboration with community colleges, which, you know, we have to look at it differently. We have to meet people where they're at. That's why the community colleges have truly been the anchor of allowing us to reach those students.
Gravel first learned about the AWS program scrolling the internet late at night. While she admits going back to school with a young son has not been easy, she felt it was the only way to grow professionally.
I just seen that the world was changing, that jobs were being remote. Everything was just turning into virtual.
More workers are looking to upskill or learn new skills to stay competitive. According to a 2020 World Economic Forum report, 50% of all employees will need to be reskilled by 2025. Amazon tells us they're partnered with 8 states to help train workers for IT and cloud computing jobs, telling us by 2025 they will have invested $1.2 billion into training and educating through cloud-based skills.
It was a lean-in by AWS to say we know we need these cloud skills in our workforce, and not just the workforce of today, but the workforce of the future.
And it's a future worker that Gravel hopes she'll one day inspire.
I just want him to see me be the best mom that I can be and actually choose like a career that I fully enjoy. And I want him to see me happy working.
And Lynette hopes to take the test for certification this December. And Amazon stresses you don't have to take a class like this on campus, except they also have self-paced courses on their website.
Rahel, thanks. It's been 6 years in what feels like a billion news cycles since our friend Jon Stewart signed off from The Daily Show. Well, now the comedy icon is set to make his return with a brand new show. It's called The Problem with Jon Stewart. Stewart says each episode will take on some of the serious issues facing Americans. He talked about his return to TV in an exclusive interview on The Today Show.
I think The Daily Show felt like doing the weather. You know, like The Today Show. Like, you're in there every day, man. You make your bones on volume. Like, no matter what, you're there. And it felt to me maybe a chance to step back for a second and maybe look at the system. How is the system incentivized that's creating this corrupt end game that we seem to be trapped in?
The new series scheduled to premiere tomorrow on Apple TV Plus, with new episodes airing every other week. What's frustrating the Fed chairman? That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Jerome Powell says he expects inflation to ease eventually, but that he remains frustrated that COVID continues to dominate our economic policies. Powell says he's also concerned that bottlenecks in supply chain will likely continue into next year. He spoke today during a panel discussion hosted by the European Central Bank. Chairman Powell also indicated next year still should be quite a strong year, as he put it, for economic growth. Macy's attempting to block Amazon from advertising on top of its flagship store in New York City. The department store chain in a legal battle with its landlord, trying to prevent a potential ad deal with Amazon. Macy's claims any advertisements from its online competitor would cause immeasurable harm to its business. And guess what's the most searched term on Microsoft's Bing? It's Google. That's according to an Alphabet lawyer during an antitrust case in Europe. The European Commission alleged Google unfairly pushed its search engine on Android users. That led to the lawyer's response, illustrating how people chose to use Google, even on rival search engines. On Wall Street, an afternoon rally retreated a bit. At the bell, the Dow up 91, the S&P up 7, the NASDAQ down 34. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. Ability to strike deals in Congress. He's touted that, and now it's time to prove it as his economic agenda faces a make-or-break vote tomorrow in the House. Progressive House Democrats have vowed to vote against the bipartisan infrastructure bill unless they can be assured that the larger human infrastructure bill will come law as well. The White House says President Biden's been involved in the negotiations and will continue to talk with key members of his party throughout the night and into tomorrow. Senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche on the top story at the bottom of the hour live in Washington. Kayla, the president trying to unite things, and it doesn't look very unified.
It is proving to be a very difficult task, Shep, but it's a crescendo moment for President Biden's agenda with landmark legislation on the line tomorrow. Tonight, Democratic leaders at the White House in hopes of hashing out a final deal with just hours before funding expires for highway construction. That's a key element of that bipartisan infrastructure bill. And after months of conversations with moderates and progressives, the White House says President Biden is counting on Speaker Pelosi to deliver.
We're going to be working in lockstep with Speaker Pelosi. He trusts her implicitly. He knows that she knows what her caucus needs. There's a shared commitment to winning this vote. But right now, I just can't look into a crystal ball quite yet.
Biden campaigned on his bipartisan bona fides and longtime Senate relationships, and the White House has tried at times to defend him as both deeply engaged, taking some 260 meetings to craft the legislation, but also hands-off, giving lawmakers space for their personal politics. But public support is eroding. A recent Gallup poll showed a majority of respondents, 53%, disapprove of the job Biden is doing as president after chaos in Afghanistan, confusion over booster shots, and conflict at the U.S.-Mexico border in recent months. The biggest decrease in support is among independents, and the White House is banking on this 1-2 legislative punch to turn that around. Shep?
Kayla, thanks. If the $1 trillion package does pass, it would fund badly needed repairs for roads and bridges really across the country. The White House says 45,000 of America's bridges are in poor condition, same for 20% of all the nation's highways and major roads. That amounts to about 173,000 miles of road. Pennsylvania ranks among the states with the most need. It's 11th worst for the interstate system, and 12th from the bottom for bridges, according to a research nonprofit. So that's where CNBC's Valerie Castro went to investigate how something as small as a pothole can cause a huge financial hole.
God, It bent the rim and it broke. I've never seen anything like that.
Ibrahim Shaji fixes tires and rims at his shop, Philly Auto Repair, on the outskirts of the city. Most days, he sees at least half a dozen customers by noon.
All the same problem?
Always, yes. A broken rim every day. We have cars coming in with cracked rims, bent rims, because of the potholes.
Road conditions are so bad in Pennsylvania that TRIP, a national transportation research group, estimates drivers there pay an extra $620 a year in vehicle maintenance and upkeep.
It's a serious problem.
What do customers tell you?
They're not happy and very, very mad as well about the conditions of the roads.
The state received a C-minus on its last infrastructure report card from the American Society of Civil Engineers. More than 7,500 miles of highway and more than 3,300 bridges are in poor condition. And it's not just surface problems. The amount of traffic that courses through the worn-down roadways means more congestion.
What we're flying over now is I-95 southbound before Center City, and this is a common congestion. Traffic always is jammed here.
From the air, we saw construction in the works.
There's about a 2-mile stretch here where they're widening the lanes.
And outside the city in Bucks County, the State Department of Transportation is widening the U.S. 1 corridor and plans to replace 3 bridges.
Over the years with the road salts, they become deteriorated.
2 phases of the project are funded, but without federal dollars, the 3rd phase could be delayed.
We only get so many dollars a year, so we can only do so much.
If the federal infrastructure bill passes, Pennsylvania stands to receive $11.3 billion in federal highway funding and more than $1.5 billion for bridges. More money to fix the issues could mean less business for Ibrahim Shaji, but he says that would be a welcome break.
I'm getting tired of it, actually. I'm 65. I'm ready to retire.
The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation says the state has an annual transportation funding gap of more than $9 billion. The federal funds would ease that burden over the next 5 years, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Shep?
Valerie, thanks. A 16-year-old surfer saved the lives of 3 men down the Jersey Shore after they got caught in a powerful rip current. Kayla Smith says she was wrapping up the day surfing in Bay Head when she saw 3 men struggling in the waves. So she grabbed her board and got back in the ocean.
Like, I could tell that they were, like, you know, probably, you know, sipping on water from the ocean and everything, and, like, they couldn't catch their breath. And I was like, I'll balance the board for you guys, just kick to help me get in, because there's no way I could have pulled them, because no one could touch out there, because it was probably, like, you know, like 10-foot drop.
Smith has been surfing since she was 11 years old. Says she was supposed to be gone from the beach at that point, but luckily, her mom was late picking her up. 23 new animal species declared extinct. Word today from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Officials say at least part of the reason is climate change. Here's some of the animals we won't see again. The ivory-billed woodpecker. U.S. wildlife officials say there have been no confirmed sightings, really, since 1944. The flat pig-toe mussel, also gone. By the time the mussel got its name, it was already dying off. And Bachman's warbler, a yellow bird with a distinct song, it was last seen in 1988. Scientists say all of the animals had a slim chance of survival when they were added to the endangered species list back in the 1960s. For all 23 of them, scientists say humans were the ultimate cause of their demise. Top military officials back on Capitol Hill for day 2, this time facing off with House lawmakers. Their questions about how the country's longest war came to that awful end. And an alligator released into the wild, crawling out of that trash can, but getting him in the can in the first place is what may just be the video of the day. The Pentagon's top brass facing another round of tough questions on the deadly and chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. Yesterday it was the Senate, today the House. America's top general bluntly admitting the U.S. lost the war.
My assessment is this is a 20-year war.
and it wasn't lost in the last 20 days or even 20 months for that matter. There's a cumulative effect to a series of strategic decisions that go way back.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley told lawmakers there are many lessons to be learned from America's longest war. CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers on that. Eamon?
Yes, Shep, today was all about blame. Republicans trying to place it squarely on President Biden and Democrats trying to spread it to former President Trump. Caught in the middle were the defense secretary and the generals who did not want to be caught in the political finger pointing. It led to some awkward moments between Republicans and the officials who were testifying today.
The blame for the disastrous withdrawal that everyone agrees was a disaster. Who's to blame for that? I'll let the silence speak for itself.
In your best military judgment, did President Biden's decisions cause this strategic failure?
First of all, I'm not going to judge a president. That's the job of the American people. That's the job of Congress.
Now, the game plan for the Democrats was to run the blame clock back farther in time to suggest that the person really responsible was President Trump, who entered into an agreement with the Taliban to withdraw U.S. forces.
We know that the die was cast with the Doha Agreement, an agreement that former President Trump entered into with the Taliban and the Taliban alone. We have learned that that agreement that demoralized the Afghan army.
And Democrats suggested that plans for an orderly withdrawal were no better under the Trump administration.
Secretary Austin, did the previous administration develop plans for withdrawal? And was there any handoff to you of those plans?
There was no handoff to me of any plans for a withdrawal.
Shep, the chairman of the committee, a Democrat, suggested that maybe no general and no president could have accomplished what ultimately was an impossible mission, and that nobody on Capitol Hill should be calling anybody an idiot for failing to do that. Because in the end, Shep, there's a lot of blame to go around.
Eamon, thank you. Few people have better insight into what's actually happening on the ground in Afghanistan now than Kabul's mayor, Daoud Sultanzai. He's a former U.S. citizen who took over as mayor last year before the Taliban regained power. Sultanzai decided to return to his native Afghanistan after the attacks of 9/11 to help rebuild the government. When foreign allies left and as high-ranking politicians fled, he stayed. I spoke to the mayor earlier from Kabul. Mayor Sultanzai, for the people of Kabul and Afghanistan in general, what has the departure of American troops done to day-to-day life?
This is an uncharted territory, including a nation that has been at war and was this was other people's war. This was war on terror that no Afghan was involved in when 9/11 happened. But the battles were fought in the mountains and in the villages of Afghanistan. But the people are asking, why all these years, 20 years of fighting, 20 years of casualties, and all of a sudden we were where we were 20 years ago.
Do Kabul citizens lay blame? And if so, on whom?
Well, this is not a time to blame. We all should make our decisions based on wisdom, because Afghanistan is a very strategic country and its strategic interest is more important to those who have global interests. Therefore, we should not make any decisions based on revenge, haste, prejudice, or getting even.
Do everyday Afghans feel as diplomatic as you just were?
No, Afghans don't feel diplomatic because we have millions of people who are at the verge of famine and hunger. Millions of people are at poverty line, and they do not have the luxury to be diplomatic. And I'm also one of them. I'm not being diplomatic. I'm saying this from Kabul, where the Taliban are sitting. And I'm also saying this to everybody, not just Americans or Europeans. I'm telling this to Taliban also, that we all should make decisions with sober minds and with wisdom. This is a nation. This is not a toy. These are people. These are not anybody's subjects. These are not slaves to any regime or to any group. So therefore, I'm not diplomatic. I'm being very, very straightforward.
Do you see a world where Afghanistan can exist and keep ISIS-K and other terrorist organizations out?
I think engagement with Afghanistan will not create the void in which those kinds of elements will foster. Engagement alone will guarantee those things, and lack of engagement will create the void that had been created 20 years ago when the United States and allies decided to come to Afghanistan.
Are Afghans mad at America?
Afghans are not mad at anybody. Afghans are don't have the luxury to be mad. Afghans are struggling with many unknowns right now. We don't know where we are headed. We don't know what is coming up. We don't know what is going to happen to the economy, to daily affairs of people, to the liberties, to education of girls and women. Many unknowns and many anxieties that are very legitimate.
Mayor Sultan Zai in our conversation earlier. Studies show 14 to 16% of U.S. veterans who served in Afghanistan and in Iraq are struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. One possible coping mechanism, having a four-legged friend around. President Biden signed into law the Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members Act, or PAWS Act. It gives the VA $10 million to create a five-year pilot training program that delivers service dogs to vets with PTSD. Some service members say similar programs have even saved their lives. From NBC News Now, here's Issa Gutierrez.
Without this type of program and recovery, I would be dead or in jail.
Stay.
I was in the U.S. Army from 2007 to 2011.
Like many veterans, Becca Stevens struggled with her mental health after her deployment in Iraq. She suffered from PTSD, anxiety, and even had thoughts of suicide.
While you're deployed, it's like you're an ice cube in a freezer. I was completely numb and dead on the inside, and that led me down a road of opiate addiction.
Becca knew she needed help. She went into rehab and worked with a therapist on and off for 7 years, but she still didn't feel like herself. One of Becca's providers at the VA recommended she look for a job working with animals. That's when she found Canines for Warriors and eventually her dog, Bobby.
It really helped my recovery because you want to be the best person you can be for this dog that's going to do everything for you.
Canines for Warriors is a Florida-based nonprofit that trains service dogs and pairs them with veterans.
When I came down and got my dog, it was just one of those things where I knew I was okay.
Like Becca, Greg Wells struggled after his deployment to Afghanistan.
I was actually removed from country because of PTSD.
But he found instant comfort in his dog, Utah. So much so that after completing the program himself, Greg now works as the lead trainer at Canines for Warriors. Dogs like Utah and Bobby are trained with commands for their warriors' specific needs.
Our warrior program is 21 days long, and it goes from the pairing process to healing with your dog to going out in public with your dog and training.
For a lot of veterans, they don't like people behind them. They don't like people approaching from behind. You know, it's our blind side. So when we put our dog in this look position, they actually swing over to our side and look behind us and give us the ability to not have to worry. Basically, if you're having anxiety, if you're depressed, anything like that, you can use the command my lap, and the dog will get in your lap, in your face, and cause you to focus on them.
Bobby even helped her talk to us.
I would never be able to speak in public, speak to a stranger, much less get across anything that I really think is important. She's been the greatest improvement to my life that I could ever have asked for.
President Biden recently signed the Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members for Veterans, or PAWS Act, into law.
And it's also going to allow the VA to start setting up benefits a little bit more regularly. We're 100% on board with that, the PAWS Act, and we think it's a great thing.
We're talking about an epidemic when it comes to veteran suicide. For there to be a program in place where more veterans can get the information that they need, it gives me goosebumps because so many people that I know could benefit from this. This is going to be huge, and I couldn't be more excited about the future when it comes to that.
Issa Gutierrez from NBC News Now. Well, March Madness is no longer just for the guys. A victory for equality announced today after some big differences in tournament sites went viral. No Time to Die, finally getting its royal premiere. We're along for the red carpet ride as Daniel Craig turns over his license to kill. And then there's the alligator.
Somebody let me know the game.
Yeah,
I got you.
For the last time, Daniel Craig is clocking in as 007, sipping martinis, shaken not stirred, operating on a license to kill. The movie, No Time to Die, it's the latest installment of the franchise, finally making its big screen debut. On the delays and Daniel Craig's thoughts about saying goodbye, here's Sky News reporter Katie Spencer, who walked the red carpet with Bond, James Bond.
When you work for Her Majesty's Secret Service, it's only right you get a royal send-off. This was Daniel Craig's big goodbye after 15 years of playing the most famous spy in the world.
I genuinely don't have any bad memories. I really don't. Everything's outweighed by the good. But I keep saying, I think it's going to take about another 15 years for me to unpick all this.
It's taken 18 months for this film to finally be shown to audiences.
Production had to stop when Daniel Craig injured himself and when director Danny Boyle left for creative differences. But the biggest delay was the global pandemic. And while many films went straight to streaming sites, with this film, 007 looks set to not only save the world, he also looks set to save theatrical releases too.
Things looked a little different at the biggest premiere London has seen post-pandemic. No media scrum at the Royal Albert Hall. Instead of autograph hunters, NHS workers and members of the armed forces were invited along. But the premiere is not just about the film's release. It marks the end of Daniel Craig's tenure as 007.
What he's done to this franchise is something quite indescribable, actually. So I'm not going to cry. I will miss him dearly, and he will always be my Bond.
He's so special. For me, he's like the ultimate Bond.
He's the Bond who dragged 007 into the 21st century, redefining how we see the franchise. This was a fittingly glamorous goodbye as Daniel Craig hands in his license to kill.
For the news, I'm Katie Spencer.
A big victory for equality in sports. The NCAA now reports it's planning to use its iconic March Madness branding for the women's basketball tournament. That's set to start next year. The slogan traditionally used exclusively for the men's championship. The change comes after the NCAA faced national outrage for the inequalities at this year's women's tournament. Remember these weight rooms? Women were originally training with a small rack of dumbbells and a few yoga mats. The men, of course, got a sprawling first-class setup. It's still unclear exactly how the governing body plans to include its March Madness brand in the D1 women's tournament. In a statement, NCAA officials wrote, "The change is geared toward increasing opportunities for planning collaboration and cross-promotion, as well as making the two championships more financially equitable." Manny Pacquiao is one of the greatest boxers of all time, and now he says he's retiring. Pacquiao announced yesterday he's hanging up the gloves after a legendary 26-year career. He finished 62 wins, 8 losses, and 2 draws. The only boxer to win titles in 8 different weight classes. The Pac-Man took down many boxing greats over the years, including Oscar De La Hoya and Juan Manuel Marquez. But he'll be best remembered for his 2015 fight with Floyd Mayweather. That shattered revenue records. The alligator now trapped in the trash can, and we have the video. This happened in Florida. Eugene Bazee is an Army vet, says he was taking out the trash when he came face-to-face with this gator you see here. Bazee cornered the beast as he hissed and thrashed, and then the guy lunged for the gator with the bin wide open. Good reptilian horror. Bazee shut the gator inside that blue trash can there and took him down to a lake near the house. Then he flipped open the can and gator took off. He took off running. The gator, though, just sort of sauntered out. Sweet time. Bazee says from now on, he'll call Wildlife Rescue to take care of any gator wrangling needs. 40 seconds left on a race to the finish. Britney Spears scoring a huge victory in court. A judge in Los Angeles suspended her father, Jamie, from the conservatorship that's controlled the pop star's life for the past 13 years. Next court date, November 12th. President Biden's agenda on the line tomorrow. The House set to vote on a $1 trillion infrastructure bill, but infighting among Democrats is threatening to tank it. Now, you know the news of this Wednesday, September. I can't get over that tail. No, that tail is a very date. Had that thing come out, that story would have been in a different part of this newscast. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.